Okay.
Let's move to the second speaker. Is Natasha Lepore, who, as many of you know, is here at Lonnie. She's a postdoctoral researcher. She has a background in quantum physics, quantum chaos from Harvard, and I guess Lonnie was very happy to and lucky to be able to convert her to medical imaging, and we are all lucky because she joined our field. So Natasha has already made a number of contributions, both in tensor-based morphometry and computational anatomy, where she's looking at non-linear Riemannian manifolds in the proper way of doing statistics, as well as a number of applications where she's been involved here, including looking at the brains of HIV patients, among other things. Apparently, one of her hobbies is to work on non-linear manifolds and measure distances. So I think that's what she's going to talk about today, right? Or something happened. So, Natasha.
Hi, can you? Okay, so I'm going to talk about tensor-based morphometry and generalizations that we made to the method and about applications to both MRI images and DTI. And so tensor-based morphometry is a method to statistically compare groups of subjects. So here I'm going to show how we compare HIV and AIDS patients, and I'm also going to show examples on twins. And just a bit of publicity, a lot of this code is on the Lonnie pipeline, so if you ever want to try, it's on there, or you can also contact us. I'm going to give you contact information at the end. So just a brief overview of tensor-based morphometry. So in tensor-based morphometry, you have a group of subjects, you have patients and controls, and you register everyone to a common target, either one of the controls or an average of them. And then in the end, after you analyze the Jacobian of the transformation, you get an image like you get here on the right, where for each voxel you see the expansion and contraction of the final image on average compared to the patient group compared to the control group on average. So, and then you can also compute p-values to see how significant the changes are. And this is just a brief overview. I'm going to explain in more detail the method. So these are the basic steps of tensor-based morphometry. So first a few pre-processing steps where you remove the skull, then correct for RF inhomogeneities, and then do 9-parameter alignment where you do translation, rotation, and scale to align all the images in the same space. And then what I'm going to talk about more today are the later steps of the method, which are the nonlinear registration to the common template and the statistical analysis. And I'm going to talk about improvements that we made to both the statistical analysis and the nonlinear registration, as well as the template to which we do the registration. So just a brief overview of tensor-based morphometry. Here's a 2D example of the code. The code is actually in 3D, but here's a 2D illustration of it. First, we do a fluid registration where the image is treated as a viscous fluid and flowed to another image. Here you see it on a corpus callosum. And we superimposed a regular grid on the image to see how the image the grid is transformed by the registration. And from these, you get a set of vectors at each voxel, the red arrows here that show how each point had to be transformed to register the images. From the deformation vectors, you get a Jacobian matrix, which is basically just a derivative of the new location over the old one. And all the statistics that we're going to do in tensor-based morphometry are done on the Jacobian matrix. So here's a brief outline of my talk. First, I'm going to describe the statistical analysis and improvements we made to it. The statistical power depends on many things, and one of them is the registration that we use, and the registration in turn depends both on the template and on the registration algorithm. So I'm going to talk to you about nonlinear registration algorithms for TBM, and also how we choose to select a template. And finally, This whole method can be applied very simply, can be changed very simply and extended to DTI. So I'm going to show you work that we did on this at the end. So first, just what we did for the statistical analysis. So usually in tensor-based morphometry, you take the Jacobian of the transformation, of the deformation field, and you take the determinant of it, and then if the determinant is greater than 1, it means that you have local increase at that voxel, and if the determinant is smaller than 1, it means you have local decrease. But what if, for instance, you have a situation like this where you have hypertrophy in one direction and atrophy in the other direction? Well, then you can imagine a case where you'd have where the hypertrophy and the atrophy would almost cancel out, and then you would get a determinant that's very close to 1, and then you wouldn't see anything at that voxel, but clearly there's stuff going on there. So what we want to do is include both the volume information and the shape information in the statistics in order to have more powerful statistics. So the way we do this is we build this quantity here, which is called a deformation tensor, which is the Jacobian transpose times the Jacobian and square root of the whole thing. And this quantity here is a positive definite symmetric matrix, and it has 6 components in 3 dimensions. The 6 independent components in 3 dimensions, and we're going to do multivariate statistics on all the 6 components. In fact, we can't do statistics directly on the deformation tensor because you've heard a lot about the log Euclidean method this week that was found at INRIA. The deformation tensors live on a curved manifold, and so if we were, for instance, to try to compute a Euclidean distance on them, well, we'd end up being outside the manifold. Here I'm representing the deformation tensor by an ellipse where the axes of the ellipse point in the direction of the changes, and the length of them are the sizes of the changes. And you can see here, like if you were to compute a distance directly, you'd end up outside of the manifold. On the other hand, so we'd want to do something more like this. What we do to compute our statistics is that using the log Euclidean framework, we project everything using the matrix logarithm to the tangent plane at the origin of the manifold. And here in this is a flat space, so here we can just do simple computations, and then we can reproject back using the matrix exponential. So what I'm going to show you, well, we can do statistics on all 6 components of the matrix. We can also, I'm going to show you how, like in our implementation, if you wanted to do statistics just on volume, you could do that. We could do statistics on all sorts of, on all the subsets of this quantity. So I'm going to show you what we did with it. And here's our application. So we applied this method to HIV-AIDS data set. We have a set of 26 HIV-AIDS patients and 14 controls, and I'm going to show you what the statistics look like if we're just looking at local volume changes or volume and shape changes. Also, we can't really assume that any of the data is normally distributed, so what we're going to do, instead of assuming a distribution at each voxel, is we're going to do permutation-based statistics at each voxel. So what we're going to do is we're going to compute a t-value at each voxel, or t-squared value if we're going to use multivariate statistics. For multivariate statistics, we're using the Hotelling's t-squared test, which is the generalization of the t-test for multivariate statistics. So we're going to build a distribution. So to do permutation statistics, we're going to compute the t-value for our real data, and then we're going to permute the labels for the patients and control together, and then build a new distribution, and we're going to compare the t-value from the real data to the permutation distribution. So this way we have a non-parametric distribution at each voxel, and we don't need to assume anything to be normally distributed. So here we tested our statistics on the corpus callosum, and here's what we get for if we're using volume statistics only. Here, all the green regions are regions that are statistically significant at peak smaller than 0.05. And here you see the volume-only different subquantities of the matrix, like for instance, the angle to the x-axis, the anisotropy of the changes, the eigenvalues of the change, and here with the full deformation tensors. And here you can see that you get a lot more green regions if you use multivariate statistics. So, so it looks like our method does better. The only thing is it doesn't seem to work in every region. Here you can see just with volume changes, you can see that it works better here for the determinant. So it depends on your data a little bit what's going to work better, whether just if you just use the volume changes or if you use the full deformation tensors. It depends on how much data you have and how much noise there is in the data. Here's a 3D example. Here on the left, you see an example of looking. These are the p-values for volume changes at each voxel. Here you see on the left, you see just for the determinant, and here on the right, you see for the deformation tensors. And you can see everything smaller than green here is statistically significant. And you can see that for the determinant, you don't get very many regions that are statistically significant, whereas if you use the deformation tensors, a lot of the white matter is statistically significantly changed. So now I'm going to move on to the next part of the talk. So now we have a way to do statistical analysis. Now, how do we do the registration in a way that's consistent with the way we do our statistics? And so first, just a brief overview of fluid versus elastic registration. In the top row here, you see elastic registration. And here in the bottom row, you see fluid registration. And in elastic registration, the image is treated as an elastic where the forces are trying to get the images into alignment and against restoring forces of the medium. And you see here the registration from a disk to a C, and this is what we'd like to get. On the other hand, this is what we would get if we tried to do this registration using elastic registration. And so the problem is that you can't pull the elastic too much, otherwise it'll tear. And so this is all we can do in this particular case. On the other hand, with fluid registration, the image is treated as a fluid and is flowed into alignment to the other image here. And there's also a regularizer so that the image doesn't tear or fold while you're doing the registration. So now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our fluid registration algorithm. So in the standard fluid registration algorithm, you have a force term, and in this case here, and a regularization term. So the force term here that we're going to use that drives the images into alignment is the intensity difference between the images. And there's many other possible force terms, but here we're just going to stick to this one because it's the one we use in our algorithm. And we're going to try to look at how to do the regularization for tensor-based morphometry. So what are we looking for in our regularizer? Well, the natural way to do a regularization would be to use a function of the deformation tensors because these characterize a distortion of the local volume. On the other hand, with deformation tensors, like I said before, we need to use the log Euclidean framework because those matrices live on a curved space. And we'd also want, as I just mentioned, we'd prefer to have a fluid regularizer so we could have large deformations. So we're very lucky that Xavier Pennec in 2005 already wrote a regularizer that satisfies the first two points here, where the regularizer is a function of the deformation tensors, and it's also already using the log Euclidean framework. And he's going to talk to you a little bit more about this in his talk. But his regularizer is for elastic registration, and so what we did is that we generalized it to do fluid registration. And so so all we did is we used basically the same regularizer, but all we changed is this term here, where we used instead a function of the velocity, so the rate of deformation instead of the deformation tensors. So now we're happy that we have our regularizer, and we have our whole registration algorithm, and now I'm going to show you some results of this. From now on, the data set that I'm going to use is a data set of twins, so 23 pairs of identical twins and 23 pairs of fraternal twins. This is data that was acquired on a 40 MRI scan, and the DTI result that I'm going to show you later in the talk are with the same data set, and it's 30 direction DTI, and this is from a big database that we're currently acquiring of 1,150 healthy twins that are between 21 and 27 years old. So just basically, how do you do statistics on twins? So far I've talked about looking at comparing groups of patients and controls, but on twins that's not what we want to do. In fact, what we want to do with twins is we want to see how correlated the volumes are, the shape is between within pairs compared to unrelated individuals. And so instead of just doing statistics on the Jacobian, now we're going to look at this quantity here, which is called the interclass correlation, which is the mean squared between pairs minus mean square within pairs normalized by the sum of the two. And basically, you don't need to remember this formula, but all it's saying is it's saying how are pairs correlated compared to unrelated individuals. And if this quantity here is closer than one, it means that pairs are closer to each other than unrelated people. If it's closer to zero, it means that they're the same as unrelated individual. And if it's smaller than zero, it means unrelated individual are closer to each other than pairs. So we don't want that. Identical twins share 100% of their genes, whereas fraternal twins share 50%, on average 50% of their genes. So by looking at both identical twins and fraternal twins, we're going to be able to see, to get an idea of how heritable each part of the brain is. So since I'm presenting a registration algorithm, just quickly showing you that it actually works. So here's registration from this image to this image. And here you can see the registered image. It looks pretty much like this one. And here's the difference between the two images, the registered image and the target image. So you see that the registration seems to work pretty well. Here I'm showing the percent mean absolute difference in volume at each voxel. And here on the top row, is for the Jacobian for the determinant of the Jacobian, so volume differences. Here I'm actually showing the anisotropy in the changes, and here's for identical twins and for fraternal twins. So here the more red you are, the more it means that your volumes the volume is different between individuals in a pair, and you can see as expected that fraternal twins are a lot more different from each other than our identical twins. You can see also that the volume here there's more differences here between the volume images than in the anisotropy images, so it seems like the volume is a more heritable quantity than the anisotropy. So here I'm showing the p-values for identical twins correlation and identical twins correlation and fraternal twins, and you can see that anything below green here also is statistically significant at a p of 0.05, and you can see that the identical twins have a lot more green and red regions that are statistically significantly correlated compared to the fraternal twins on this bottom row here. However, the most important part of this slide is that a lot of times, a lot of the comments on all these methods is, well, what if you use a different registration algorithm? Do you end up getting the same answer? Or does your answer just depend on your registration algorithm? Well, here what we did is we compared our registration algorithm to a more standard fluid registration algorithm. And you can see that the results are pretty much the same. You can see that we get pretty much the same regions that are correlated using both algorithms. So here the first row is one algorithm, the second row is the standard, this is our algorithm, this is the standard algorithm, and again here is our algorithm and the standard one, and you can see that we get pretty much the same results, at least for those two algorithms. Okay, so now I've talked about the statistical analysis, I talked about the registration. Now, of course, the other part of the registration is what do you register to, because that makes a big difference. So what do we want in a good template? Well, if we just register to one individual, well then you might end up choosing an individual that has very different features from the rest of your sample, or you end up having some bias by choosing just one individual. On the other hand, well, if you use just one individual, I mean, if we were to try to make an average, we'd want to make an average, since we're doing everything on the deformation tensors, we'd want to make some kind of average of the deformation tensors. Well, we tried to do that, and it turns out that you don't get very good results. The problem being that you don't get, if you just do a straight average, you get fuzzy boundaries, and then the registration isn't very good. So how do we fix this? Well, the way to fix it, at least the one we found, is, well, we register to individuals, but we register to many individuals, and then we average after the registration. So here's a simple schematic of the procedure. So say we take this brain here, we register it to each of the templates. Then to put everything in a common space, we do a second registration where we register to a common space. And then once we're in the common space, we average all the deformation tensors from all three registration at each voxel. And so then this gives us an average deformation tensor at each voxel. And we repeat this for each brain in our data set. So here are results that we get using this method. Here again, identical twins here, and then fraternal twins, and these are p-values, and anything below green is statistically significant. You can see here that, you know, we get a lot of red region, a lot of nice regions here by using this method. Well, what's interesting here, all the results I'd shown you before here, these were all registrations that were done to just a single individual, and so you can see that they're nice results, but they're a little noisy. And so whereas here it looks like you get a much nicer image from doing this averaging. And here, just how to see that the method works well. Here we tried, what if we do the average with one template, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and here we just computed on this axis the sum of all the deformation tensor, and the idea is that the smaller the deformation are, the more average your template is. And here the red line is for monozygotic twins, for identical twins, and the blue line is for fraternal twins. And you can see that you don't actually need that many templates to do this. You just need, like, it starts to plateau here around four templates. So you don't need to use all your data set of, you don't need to use more than four templates, at least for the data set we have, to do this averaging. And then you start to get plateau here. Okay, so now I've talked about all these different steps, the statistical analysis, the registration, and the template. Well, in fact, it turns out that we can do practically the exact same thing using DTI data with very, very small modifications. And so I'm going to show you what we did for with DTI data. DTI data there's changes in the registration method and changes in the statistics from using the DTI. In the registration, well, DTI data is harder to register than MR data, and you saw some nice registration DTI registration algorithm this week, but we're just instead of using a DTI registration algorithm, what we did is we just chose to just register the MR images and then just apply the same deformation to each component of the tensor. Also, as Jim just talked about, the tensors will be misaligned by the registration. So the other difference here is that we need to rotate the tensors so that they're aligned with the anatomy. And finally, before we were doing statistics on deformation tensors. Well, now we're lucky that diffusion tensors look exactly the same as deformation tensors. They're also positive definite symmetric matrices, and they're 3x3 matrices. So we can just use directly exactly the same set of statistics that we were using before. And here's a set of results using on DTI. This is using the same set of twins as before, and you can see, just look at the first row here. This is fractional isotropy, and the top images are for identical twins, here for fraternal twins, and this is the correlation again. Here are the p-values, where everything colored here is statistically significantly correlated. And you can see again that all the white matter regions are more correlated in identical twins than in fraternal twins. Here, heritability is twice this, minus twice this. And basically, if it's one, it means that brain region is very heritable. And if it's zero, it means it's not. And you can see that basically all the white matter regions are pretty much covered. That's it. My talk, I think, was a little bit short, but I'm sure no one will mind. Here's our group, Paul, that you all know. The two graduate students who worked on this, Kaladin worked a lot on the registration, and Agatha worked on the DTI, and EU did a lot of the code testing, and Marina was pre-processing all the twin data, and Xavier helped with the math and the making the algorithms. So thank you. They're 21 to 27 years old.
Because functionally, they usually behave very similar. There's not much correlation in terms of structural. When you hit the custom places, but that's why I'm wondering if the age is also a reason.
There's not much correlation where?
I mean, if they see correlation, structural correlation, between the twins, and if they're 21, could you see more when they're 40 or less?
We haven't tried with 40-year-olds, but are you saying because you don't see anything here?
I was just wondering.
Yeah, so we haven't done this with 40-year-olds yet. So.
This is a really nice study. So the question is, did you have any surprise? I mean, just if you summarize the result, you would say identical twins are more similar than non-identical twins.
Yeah.
But if you go through some details in the analysis, was something surprising to you that you did not anticipate to find, or some detail structures that you thought, yeah, maybe, or so?
Well, I was actually I think the most surprising was how much of it was actually heritable. This image was a little surprising to me because it seems like it covers everything. But are you talking more about particular structures?
I was just curious.
Yeah, no,
if
but
there was something that you said, yeah, I did not really expect this to happen. And,
yeah, I think I didn't expect this to work so well, but then all these things to be.
But then if you compare the structural to the DTI,
yeah.
I mean, the images suggest that there is a higher similarity of the structural features than of the FA features, isn't it? Or?
Yeah, I think part of it is just that the data is noisier here also.
Okay.
I think it would probably, you know, as DTI methods improve, we might end up seeing them, seeing more changes, I mean, more regions here.
Yes, I have a question, going back to the first part of your tensor-based analysis. Your, like in a standard voxel-based analysis or whatever, voxel by voxel statistics, you typically smooth the images so that, because otherwise you have very noisy voxelized measurements. So you typically smooth them by, you know, John Aspen.
Yeah, we don't
do
that.
Smooth.
No, we don't smooth. Yeah.
So.
It seems to give okay results anyway without the smoothing.
Yeah, no, it might be actually improve the your sensitivity, because at least if you judge from the structure, the standard voxel based analysis, certainly if you smooth by some, not too much but not too little, you improve your ability to detect good differences.
Right.
Other questions? All right, thank you very much, Natasha.